Okay. So, thank you so much, Christian. It's a great pleasure to speak with you. So, for those of you who don't know who Christian is, I'll let him introduce himself, tell us who he is and what he's been doing. So, Christian.
Sure. Hi. I am Dr. Christian Aubrey. I am currently a lecturer at the University of Suffolk in linguistics, and I teach a broad range of linguistic courses. Prior to this, I was involved in the Accent Bias Project, which is a large-scale funded project at Queen Mary University of London and the University of York. And in that project, we were investigating accent bias and how accent bias and discrimination affect people's job opportunities. Basically, if candidates are perceived to be more, competent on the basis of their accent. But generally, I'm interested in all kind of types of variations, so spoken language variation, written language variation. Hopefully. We can discuss some interesting stuff.
Thank you, Christian. So I'm really interested in your accent-related bias and how that fosters discrimination. And so when we talk about diversity, inclusion, and equity, why do you think it's important to look at language as well? Why do you focus on language as well?
So I think it's interesting that we have, focused a lot on, and quite rightly, on things like sexism, racism, etc., in terms of non-linguistic. Well, so obviously we discuss sometimes linguistics, but we think of those as discrimination in terms of related to gender, whatever. But we often see language is used as a kind of proxy for things that are kind of outlawed, right? So quite rightly, you can no longer be sexist, you can no longer be racist to somebody. But in certain environments, you can make comments about somebody's accent or the way they speak, and you're rarely challenged by about those. But often those kind of evaluations are in some way related to the things that we have outlawed, right? So for example, the whole idea of clear English when it's applied to people who are non-native speaking English, obviously that isn't entirely ideologically like removed, right? It is related to this idea that there is one form of standard English, and deviance from it is perceived to be some kind of particularly bad thing, which obviously as linguists we know that whole kind of ideology is just not, it doesn't make much sense when there isn't really one standard of English, there's multiple standards. So yeah, I think what's interesting for us is as linguists we kind of need to make people aware that language, whilst it's often not the sole focus of diversity inclusivity training, it is often the thing that people still kind of rely on to make those judgments about people.
Thank you so much. So I like two words you use, evaluations and judgments. And that's where the crux of the problem lies. Because once you open your mouth to speak, people are making judgments about you, whether they want to hire you for a job or you're on a job and they are looking for someone to promote, you know. So that is, it's like gatekeepers or whoever is who's in charge of making decisions in organizations need to be aware that something like that exists, and they need to be consciously making efforts to overcome some of these things. So before we actually how they can overcome some of this, if you can share a little bit more of, or give us let's say a bit more of an in-depth view about the project, your accent bias project, what you found, what you think is useful for people to take away, both people who are in charge of diversity and inclusion, or anyone who's listening to us.
So I think the first point to note is we all have preferences. That is just a factor of life. And those preferences alone are not problematic. they're problematic when they become applied as a form of judgment, like you were just saying. So, you know, having kind of these stereotypes and whatever is kind of a natural human tendency. But the issue is when then they are applied, you know, regardless of the situation. So in the project, what we were interested in doing is looking at how, you know, accents were evaluated generally in the UK public. And what we found is there was an overwhelming tendency for individuals to downrate accents that were associated with urban centres like Birmingham, and also with minority ethnic groups like Indian English and African Caribbean, and positively evaluate accents that have been historically held as prestigious, so things like received pronunciation. And what's interesting is, although not many people speak received pronunciation, it still holds a level of prestige and status that, you know, is really kind of unshakable, because this is how ingrained language ideology is, right? We are told that there is such a thing as a standard, and it is generally assumed to in some way relate to received pronunciation. So we looked at those kind of evaluations, and then the project assessed whether candidates from who were applying for a job in a law firm would be negatively evaluated on the basis of their accent. And so we looked at those evaluations not only in the public, but also in relation to professional recruiters, so actually people in the law profession. And what's interesting there is, amongst the UK public, we saw quite a, you know, a steady pattern of favouring types of candidates with more standard accents, whereas in the law profession, those who were, you know, actually in recruitment positions had a much more nuanced kind of evaluation of accents. So you know, it's kind of an interesting pattern to think about how things like social change, how, you know, the decentering of received pronunciation in media, for example, and how accent diversity as a whole has become like commonplace, and how these kind of things might be influencing our evaluations of sociolinguistic diversity, and how then maybe in contemporary society, we are, you know, not getting better, but being at some points able to detract, you know, the speaker from maybe those, you know, associations of accent.
So I think that's quite interesting. And if you can, so somebody who is not a linguist who is listening to us will probably be wondering, so how did you go about your study? What are some of the measures you use? What are some of the, if you can just give us a brief background of what you actually did, whether you did interviews, whether you did experiments, that would be useful as well.
Yeah, so the first study was a experimental study online, right? So individuals, a market research group, were asked to, who were representative of the UK public, were asked to respond to individuals' responses in an interview session. So they were essentially told that this was a candidate applying for a job in a law firm, and then the individuals were asked to rate the quality of their answer. And so these answers as well had been already evaluated by legal professionals as being high quality or low quality. So we then had 10 actors of five different accents record these questions, and we were able to contrast, you know, the difference in evaluation between the different accents to see if it was accent that was being, you know, that was negatively affecting the quality of the answer. So that's one thing that on the Accent Bias Project was looked at, for example. But we, the project has, you know, some training resources, etc., that I think for people working in inclusivity and diversity training are actually really important to kind of think about how they could be integrated into things like unconscious bias training.
Thank you so much. So this is something that has actually been tested and done. It's, and it's interesting that I mean, when you think about it, what has accent got to do with someone's ability to do a job or not? But that is it. And it's so unfair that people will have to suffer or not be able to get a job that they are very much qualified to do because their accent results in them being perceived as not being able to do the job. I guess you would agree with me is that, I mean, one way of solving this problem is one, training.
Yes, yeah.
The people on the job, people who are actually making
decisions
to be conscious, like you said, and made part of unconscious bias training.
Often yeah.
To make people.
Well, I think that's, it's interesting because, you know, we are in contemporary world, right? In contemporary society, you know, multilingualism is the norm. There is a huge amount of linguistic diversity in our, like, particularly in our cities, right? And, you know, integrating voices of people who don't sound standard, whatever standard is, you know, is something that we need to recognize is part of contemporary society, right? We want our workforce to reflect the people that they serve, and particularly in, you know, or that they work for or they work with. So interestingly, like in the lawyer survey, when we looked at lawyers' responses, that was the kind of thing I think we were seeing, is those kind of awareness of linguistic diversity more so.
I think that's true. That's one thing we can also do, just to make people aware. I mean, I think sometimes we just need to bring it into the forefront and shine more light on it, that we live in a linguistically diverse landscape, and we need to give all members of this community a chance. We need to make their voices heard, make their contributions valued as part of a team. And it's interesting that I've been speaking to people of from ethnic minority backgrounds, and there's another challenge even outside the interview. So if you manage to go through the interview process on the job, there are other hosts of communication challenges that arise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I see you nodding your head. Have you had any experience of this, or has anybody related a thing like this to you?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, you're the expert in intercultural communication. So, you know, given that we are doing business now as like a global, you know, a business sector, I can imagine that these kind of experiences are pretty frequent, where, you know, different cultures and their assumptions about how to do business, you know, how firm to hold somebody's hand when you shake it, for example, are the kind of causes of a lot of misunderstandings today. But yeah, I mean, personally, you know, I'm British. I sound on the whole relatively standard, but you know, you can probably hear there's some features in my speech that are London, because I am from London, right? So even the way I say butter, as butter, not butter, for example, which, you know, people at times will call me out for, right? And they say, you know, it's butter, or even these like micro, you know, awareness of linguistic variation and the kind of ideologies that surround that, right? But I mean, on the whole, I probably get a much easier pass than a lot of other people who struggle with, you know, being evaluated as a non-native speaker.
So, I mean, what is interesting that people will call you out just for your pronunciation, you know, so that's how deeply ingrained these ideologies are in us. This kind of very prescriptive way of saying things or doing things or even looking at things, which really doesn't help. So why, you know, I'm Ghanaian, you know, and for us, we'll say drugs for medicine. And I've had someone share with me that on the job, he actually said to his boss, "Oh, I've put the drugs in the cabinet." And he was like, "What? We don't have drugs in this office." And he was also like, "What do you mean we don't have drugs in this office? I've literally put the drugs in there, you know?" So he went, so he said what he did was to go into the cabinet and bring, and he says, "Oh, that's medicine." You know, but from where they come from, they are drugs. But here, when you talk about drugs, you're talking about cocaine, you're talking about heroin. You see, so these subtle, even these subtle things. So when we're talking about equality, so people are on the job, but they are assessed based on the things they say, how they say them, and there are some of them are even perceived as not even competent enough to move beyond that level that they are currently. And I'm even if for nothing at all, I think that's what the essence of all this is about, to raise awareness that those are not fair judgments, you know. Fair evaluation. So like you rightly said, we live in a very diverse, you can have people from all backgrounds on your workforce, but do they feel that they are part of the team? This is how we can. So I think before we I let you go, I mean, you've lived in London for a very long time, so you might have experiences, lots of experiences of communicating with people who are not from your own background. You were like, hold on a minute, what is going on here? And what you did, some of the strategies you used to be able to overcome. I mean, as a linguist, I know that you are aware of this, you know, but someone who's listening to you who is not a linguist, how can they cope?
I mean, that's the thing, is like, I think awareness is kind of prime, right? It's like being aware that sometimes the way that somebody is interacting with you is not because they are rude, or it's not because they are, you know, not competent in a language, but because they are approaching it with a particular pair of glasses, if you want to use an analogy, that you don't share, right? So, I mean, you know, different styles of communication are attributed to your upbringing, right? You can't just shift the different communication patterns like changing a pair of clothes. That's not how it works. We are socialized into like language from an early age. And so being aware that that's even a thing, because I think a lot of people don't realize that it really is that higher level of kind of interaction, that people aren't intending to be rude or intending to be direct, but that is what you do in other cultures or in other languages. So I think fundamentally, like I say, it is primarily about being aware, and also, you know, it comes back to that whole thing that you have to treat people with respect, right? And if we're thinking about language as a source for discrimination or a potential area where people can be discriminated against, you know, not judging people when they say butter instead of butter, or not judging people when their English sounds non-native, because they may have had a different linguistic model, i.e. they might have learned in Singapore, where, you know, the English there might be kind of diffused from other kind of Asian speaking cultures or cultures. So I guess, yeah, generally it is awareness, but also respect, right? And recognizing that everybody approaches these situations with different cultural and linguistic backgrounds.
And I know you've been working with what would you, that's coming to me, that even the children, little children at school, need to be told this, you know. We grow up with these things. They grow up to accept a certain norm, you know. So awareness raising shouldn't just be at the employee-employer relations level. But even children should be made aware in school that, look, we live in a very diverse community, and the world is not just shaped by Britain or US or whatever. I mean, there are so many worldviews that you need to listen to and be respectful of those worldviews as well. So, yeah, thank you, Christian. I think that's one thing that I'm going to add to my...
No worries.
Yes, but I think finally, before I let you go, if we have any one who's listening to us, who is in this space, you know, who is either a person from a minority background or someone in charge of inclusion and diversity at the workplace, what would be two or three takeaways, or even one, that you'd want to leave them with?
So I think number one, you know, just because you can't see sexism or racism or homophobia in direct terms does not mean it isn't being applied in other ways, i.e. because your language tells us stuff about your social characteristics, people will make judgments on the basis of that. So it can be, you know, more covert than the overt sexism or racism that we're looking for, or even in our unconscious bias training, you know, that's where we can see discrimination could still be an issue. I think equally, you know, the idea that we are becoming more multilingual, we are becoming more culturally diverse, our cities, you know, our workplaces are becoming more representative of the people we work with. And if we are to really appreciate that cultural diversity and integrate it, we need to do something like look at language, because that's where we, you know, see those differences. So I think whilst we've done a lot of work in integrating cultural diversity in one way, I think there's still a lot of work to do in terms of language. And I think that's what, if I was in diversity, inclusion and, you know, cultural training, that's where I'd be focusing on, is that kind of, you know, level that we've been discussing in this podcast. So yeah, that's hopefully some two relatively useful takeaways. And also, you know, there's quite a lot of resources out there from linguists on the internet that people can make use of. You don't need to find these like in the dark somewhere or to spend ages looking for them. They're already out there.
Thank you so much, Christian.
No worries.
I can't tell you how much I appreciate this. I know you're very busy, and having to squeeze this into your day is...
I'm very happy to, Rami.
Yes, I appreciate it. And it's been nice talking to you, Christian, as always.
Yeah, and to you. I'll let you go.
No worries. Enjoy the rest of the day, and thank you once again, Christian.
Thanks, Rami. Have a nice evening.
You too, Christian. Bye.
See you. Bye-bye.